Welcome to Radio Curious. I'm Barry Vogel. In our last interview, we visited with the producers and directors of the film States of Grace, about the life of a woman honored by the Dalai Lama for her medical work at the height of the AIDS epidemic in San Francisco, California. In this edition of Radio Curious, we visit with that woman, Dr. Grace Damon. Dr. Grace had a near-death experience resulting from a head-on collision on the Golden Gate Bridge in 2008. She awoke 48 comatose days later after multiple surgeries for, as she says, trashed bones and internal organs. With her cognitive abilities fully intact, she began rehabilitation and was able to go home a year later. In 2014, she returned to work as the medical director of the pain clinic at the San Francisco, California Laguna Honda Hospital, where she previously worked as a physician for 18 years. Notwithstanding her confinement to a wheelchair, she proudly describes her legal efforts to urge the Golden Gate Bridge Authority to install a dividing barrier intended to prevent future head-on collisions on the bridge. This installation is scheduled to begin in the fall of 2014. Dr. Grace Damon and I visited by phone from her home at the Green Gulch Farm Zen Center in Muir Beach, California, on May 23, 2014. We began our conversation when I asked her to describe her current station on the continuum of her life's experience.
I feel like I'm catching up with myself still. Like, it's taken me a very long time to even realize I'm disabled, meaning I don't ever dream about having a disabled body, and I really was very unrealistic. So that's what I mean about catching up with myself.
In terms of not dreaming about having a disabled body, can you share with us how you see yourself in your dreams?
I'm not in a wheelchair. I'm walking. I'm surfing. You know, nothing is any different. I'm using my hands totally normally. So my dream life, anyway, has stayed way back in 2008.
Let's talk about your recovery and some of the images that I saw in the film, The States of Grace. There was one that caught my attention where you were asked, how is it for you? And you opened your throat and let out a shriek.
Got it.
I interpreted that to be an expression of anger.
I think in that moment I was angry. I mean, everything about this shifts from moment to moment.
Still?
Yeah, still. I'm meaning, you know, not very much still, but I still have moments in which I'm that angry. I still have moments in which I'm totally sad. Most of the time, I just go along the way all of us go along, you know, just appreciating the momentariness of life itself, meaning I look at the sun and I see that it's glowing and I think, this is a great place. Thank goodness for the sun. Thank goodness for all the flowers. Thank goodness for the green grass. You know, very much I'm not caught up either in the good or the bad of anything for very long.
I heard you say, I would have died early on if it weren't for my Zen practice. How did that keep you alive?
Well, that was a statement I made then. I'm not sure I would make that statement now, but it was true at that time. And I think what my Zen training had shown me was that everything changes very, very quickly. Nothing lasts for very long at all. And that was invaluable. particularly early on, because unlike most people, I didn't have that shock of thinking that everything was going to last forever.
Within the Zen perspective, how did you deal with the anger that confronted you?
That's a really good question. I'm not sure I have totally dealt with it, but sort of what I tried to do is just let it go, just have it come out, and there it is, like the scream. You know, as much as I can do that, it's a good thing to do. And then, I'm not carrying it around all the time at all. It's always a backdrop and something that I can dip into. But it isn't a particularly helpful, you know, feeling. It's not something unhelpful, but it's not particularly helpful unchanneled. So I do try to give some thought as to how I can utilize that energy in my own rehabilitation, for example. Or, you know, bringing the lawsuit was very much a case of my being angry and my wanting to change something. And even though the lawsuit itself was unsuccessful, it may have had something to do with the barriers getting built on the Golden Gate Bridge, which is going to happen in November 2014.
That those would be barriers separating the north and south traffic.
Right. And there'll be movable barriers. And my lawsuit was designed just to try to get them to, you know, I felt like if they had one bad lawsuit in the sense that they lost, then they couldn't help but build the barrier, the median divide. And I lost the lawsuit just about 2 weeks before they announced their unanimous decision to have the barrier built. So I was very pleased. I thought, you know, I was very much afraid that the lawsuit being terminated, meaning the Supreme Court said that I didn't have standing to bring the case, that the case had been litigated, a similar circumstance case had been litigated in 1985, and it didn't matter that new technology was available because it had been litigated, each district had done due diligence, then, you know, that was enough. Didn't have any standing. The standing of the prior case was the ruling.
Just recently, I heard Norman Fisher, a Zen priest who...
I know him well.
I thought you may. Talking about anger. And his counsel to the group of us whom he addressed was to face your anger head on. Deal with the most difficult aspects of our life first. Is that something that you were able to do?
I don't have any choice. It's very much choiceless. I mean, the most difficult aspects of my life are being totally dependent, or not quite totally dependent, but dependent. Not being able to do the things that I always could do for myself and for other people. And I don't have any choice but to deal with that every day of my life.
For our listeners who may not be familiar with the circumstances of your unrequested dependency, could you share with us?
So I cannot bend over to untie or tie my shoes, and I cannot walk, so I'm dependent on an electric wheelchair, which I cannot get in and out of without some help. What else? I can't move my arms over my head, so I can't put a shirt on and off without a lot of work, meaning it takes about 20 minutes for me to get a shirt on without assistance. So pretty much I need to be helped getting dressed in the morning and at night. And, for example, I can't open a door with my left hand because I can't turn it over. My right arm, I can turn over so I can hold a pencil, for example, in that hand. But my handwriting has gone to pot. Not that I ever had great handwriting. So, for example, cooking would be a real stretch. luckily I live in a community that's got meals cooked, and I've got a care, I've got a partner in house that can help me with most of that stuff.
Again, for our listeners who may have gleaned a little bit about what happened in reference to the lawsuit, can you share with us what happened that brought you to your current physical state?
I was driving across the Golden Gate Bridge, bringing my daughter and myself back to Marin about 3:30 in the afternoon on the 21st, and I was unfortunately driving in the suicide lane, which I never drive in. That's the median lane, because I was running very late for a dental appointment. Now, I'm a physician, and I'd spent a lot of time with my daughter's teacher, who was about to give birth, so I just wanted to make sure that she was doing fine. And anyway, so we were running a little late, and my daughter was doing homework in the front seat. Our dog was in the back seat, and apparently somebody that I've since come to know was driving back from Marin County, where he'd seen his father's oncologist. His father had prostate cancer, and he had just found out that his father was terminal with it. So he'd just spent, you know, half an hour in Greenbrae with his father's oncologist. And he himself was a new father of, I think, about a two-week-old at that point. So he was driving back to San Francisco where he lived. And for some reason, he probably went into what's called atrial fibrillation, meaning his heart started beating irregularly. It had happened once earlier that week. He'd gone to the doctor, but they had no idea what was going on. They didn't know that he was in atrial fibrillation. Anyway, that caused him to lose consciousness. So he crossed over two lanes of traffic. He hit a car in front of me and then plowed into the driver's side, you know, my side of the vehicle. And my daughter, luckily, was not hurt, nor was my dog. But I was trashed, as they like to say in medical terms, meaning I was conscious at the time they got to me, but I lost consciousness, and I kept telling them I did not want to lose consciousness until I got to the ER, because then I knew that I could track how my daughter was doing. I knew she was going to be okay. That was one of the last things I can remember, was saying to the state police, do not let me go to sleep. Do not let me go to sleep. Anyway, I was airlifted out of there to John Muir Hospital, which is in Walnut Creek, because they have the only trauma center close by. And being a doctor, I've looked at all of the facts and figures on me, and I could see, you know, that I was doing fine. I got perfect Apgar scores, or perfect Glasgow coma scores initially. So I seemingly was doing fine. And then they gave me some morphine in the helicopter. And then by the time I got to the ER, it was clear that I was really crashing. So eventually, I promptly passed out when I got to the ER, and they promptly took me to surgery. And anyway, most of my abdominal contents were in my left lung, upper lung field. I'd broken 13 bones, and, you know, I'd torn hepatic artery and I think a radial artery. So within about 3 hours, I got five times my blood volume back. I was bleeding so badly. And, you know, they spent a long time in the OR just trying to get me stabilized. And I promptly went into a coma where I stayed for 46 days.
Was that coma induced?
No. No, no.
I'd like to take a moment and say that in this edition of Radio Curious, we're visiting with Dr. Grace Dammann, who is now acting as a physician as she did before the experience that she endured in 2008 in May. You're listening to Radio Curious. I'm Barry Vogel. Grace, you woke up.
Yeah.
What happened? What did you see?
So You know, I've now seen the pictures of me waking up, and I've heard other people's stories. But for me, I was still in a somewhat liminal field. I can remember one dream that I had after I'd woken up, and it was a dream in which I told one of my best friends, listen, Tylenol doesn't do the trick. If you're really in pain, you need something more than Tylenol. And, you know, that was one thing that I remember. I also remember being totally concerned that my stepdaughters, or the two daughters that I'd helped to raise, not my own daughter, but two daughters that I'd raised earlier, that they shouldn't have to feel the need to take care of me. And so I was sort of traveling in that zone for a while. And I very quickly realized I got very bored of people asking me how I was. So to diffuse that, I would then turn the question. I'd say, how are you? You know, and everybody in California either has problems with their work life or their relationship life. So my answer to both of those things was, do you love what you're doing? If you don't love what you're doing, get out and find what you do love. If you don't love who you're with, end it. Do it now. Just do it now. And somehow, for some reason, people kept coming back wanting that advice. So I had a big stream of visitors, number one. And number two, probably they were coming because, you know, I was sort of a born-again-from-the-dead kind of being at that point.
I'd like to ask you what you would have liked to have been asked by your visitors at that time.
Well, what I most liked was when somebody said, what was the best thing that happened in the last hour for you? Because that was where I was living, was in the hour before and the hour after, not in any prolonged time. For example, I wasn't thinking about going back to work. I wasn't particularly anxious about anything. I wasn't in terrible pain. So luckily, you know, I could be content in the here and now. And I really was very content in the here and now, from my perspective.
I'd like to ask you about something you just said concerning the advice. Particularly, if you're in a relationship that doesn't work, get out now. And I'd like you to respond to that from the perspective of your relationship with your longtime partner, Fu, who turned out to be the person who was your primary caregiver for 5 years, and how your relationship with her changed.
Of course, it totally changed. But I can't, you know, because I've totally changed, and she's totally changed. It's not all for the worse or not all for the better. It just has happened. And I think that's what I would say to anybody. Things change. Things are always changing. We may not recognize it, but they're always changing. So I became a full-time recipient of care. She became a full-time caregiver. That wasn't in her nature. That wasn't in my nature. But that is what happened.
In my reading, there's often a suggestion where the full-time caregiver is better if it's not a family member or a close loved one,
right,
because of the shift of the relationship.
Right. Yeah, and I've been fortunate enough to be able to afford part-time extra caregivers, which has, you know, kind of saved both of us. But ideally, you're right. As a physician, I don't think any family member should be the full-time caregiver, ever. It never works out well. And in our case, it's worked out, I think, somewhat well in that, you know, it's what had to happen for a variety of reasons, mostly because we still have a daughter that we're sharing, and we're trying to raise her as consciously as we can. And so staying together makes that easier.
Let's turn towards your work now as a physician. Can you share with us what you do and where you do it?
Yes, I'd gladly do that. I'm a pain doctor at Laguna Honda Hospital. I'm the medical director of the pain clinic. That's the institution where I was working on the day of the accident. And I'd worked there for about 23 years.
Are you in pain now as a customary physical feeling?
I've got discomfort often, but frank pain I don't have very often. I mean, that's not true. I broke my pelvis in about 7 places, and they never did set it. So when I have to sit for a long period of time, I get very uncomfortable, and it borders on pain. But, you know, it's mostly just that nothing works the way it should.
What are your options to sitting?
What are my options to sitting? I can lie down, or I can stand up shortly.
By shortly, you mean for a very short period of time, a few minutes.
I walk for about 20 minutes a day, probably, and I can stand, you know, holding on to something, or I can lie down. And, of course, like most people would want to do, I can change the surface on which I sit, but most of the time I spend in my wheelchair.
Going back to something you said about the accident, you have come to know the other driver, the man who had learned of his father's condition.
Right.
How did that happen?
Well, we both contacted each other. His family left me a really nice note in the hospital. And I wasn't quite ready to see him yet, nor I think I had to wait about a year after I got out, because I just thought it would be too much for him, actually, and too much for me. But eventually, we met. He came over here with, he then had another new daughter, so he had 2 kids. And we met, I met his whole family. And we had a really nice day. That's what I can say. We had a really nice day. And actually, I called him up when I wanted to read a letter thanking the board of directors of the Bridge District for their decision to build the median barrier. I just felt like they needed to be acknowledged, because I knew that they were going to get hell as soon as the Golden Gate Bridge had to close down to do it in November. And they always getting hell about not building the suicide barrier. So I just wanted to thank them. So I called Brian and said, would you like to write the letter with me? And he said, I'm happy to do that. And I said, let's go together and we'll read the letter together. So I was the only person who read the letter, but we did go together in my van. We held hands right at the pole that we'd crashed at, or the tower that we crashed at. And we went in together to present the board of directors with something.
When will that barrier be built?
November of 2014.
Well, Dr. Grace Dammann, I want to thank you very much for being with us on Radio Curious. And before we close, is there a eureka or an aha moment in your life that you could share with us?
Sure. When the day that we were asked whether we would adopt our daughter, and I just clearly got the feeling of, just say yes. Life will take care of itself. And it really did.
Your daughter came to you with a slightly unusual condition.
Let's just say she had multiple medical potential problems. And we just said yes. And I thought, what better place than this to raise a kid? And we can do it. We'll do it with a lot of help, but we can do this. And, in fact, that's what happened. Because we, of course, were not prepared to be mothers. We had about 3-day warning. So my to-be family friend went out and bought everything that we would possibly need for the first year of her life, meaning three bassinets and, you know, umpteen diapers and this, that, and the other thing. We live in a Buddhist community, so it took up every bit of space in our house. But nonetheless, we didn't have time to do any of that. You know, we just had time to barely get the fence built around the pond so that social services would allow her to come home. That's what they were concerned about, that she might crawl into the pond and die unless a fence was built. So our wonderful community built that fence in one day.
I'd also like to ask you, Grace Dammann, what would you like to do with the remainder of your one precious life?
Enjoy it, as I've enjoyed it to this point, and be of service.
And finally, Dr. Grace Dammann, is there a book that you could recommend to our listeners?
My favorite book of all time is by Andre Schwarzbart. It's called The Last of the Just, and it's just a beautiful novel that makes, through its beauty as a novel, sense of what was impossible for me to come to terms with, which was the Holocaust.
Well, Dr. Grace, thank you very much for being with us on Radio Curious.
Thank you, Barry. Take care.
Dr. Grace Dammann returned to work as a physician at the Laguna Honda Hospital in San Francisco, California, in 2014. She continues to recover from a head-on collision on the Golden Gate Bridge in 2008 that left her confined to a wheelchair. The book she recommends is The Last of the Just by Andre Schwarzbart. This interview was recorded on May 23rd, 2014. There are over 500 archive editions of Radio Curious on our website, www.radiocurious.org, where they're free for you to stream, download, enjoy, and share. We appreciate your curiosity, ideas, comments, and questions. You may reach us by email. Our address is curious@radiocurious.org or snail mail 280 North Oak Street, Ukiah, that's UKIAH, California 95482, or by phone 707-462-6541. You've been listening to Radio Curious. Christina Onnestad is our associate producer, and I'm host and producer Barry Vogel. Thank you for listening.